You don't want vacation to end.
But with Amex Platinum, you're already planning the next one. Because you earn 5 times membership rewards points on prepaid hotels and more booked through AmexTravel.com. So every trip to the beach, and the city, and the country, and back home again, leads to another destination. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
But Mason Neville out of Oregon has been super impressive to me. He's playing good defense, but the most important thing is the power is unbelievable. He leads the nation in home runs right now, up to 23 on the season.
Hot sheet has arrived. Scotty Braun here, JJ Cooper off for the week, but I'm back. I'm back in the normal saddle here. Jacob Rudner with us today from Baseball America, along with Jeff Ponce. And, you know, we're going to not beat around the bush. I want to get straight to biz because I'm excited about this one. I'm not going to miss an in-depth hot take on the Red Sox farm system from Jeff. So we're coming in hot. Let's hit the first move.
Meep, meep.
All right. So this part of the news sucks. Tristan Casas out for the rest of the season for the Red Sox. The aftermath. Let's go over it because this is a team that's been talked about a ton for their upper echelon prospects. And Jeff, one of those prospects, of course, if we're talking about the big four, Kyle Teal ends up with the White Sox. One is Christian Campbell. He's up with the ball club and making money and doing his thing for the most part. And then there are two left, Marcelo Meyer and Roman Anthony. And the question is, why can't one of them fill in for Tristan Casas at first base instead of Romy Gonzalez and Abraham Toro, the dynamic duo? I don't think that's going to be the plan the rest of the season. Do you?
No, I can't imagine it's going to be the plan long term long term this season. The big issue with it is neither of those guys are sort of players that you're going to play consistently. Even if you're platooning sort of like righty lefty matchups and like that sort of thing, they're just, you know, they're up and down sort of quality players. They're not full-time fill-ins. I think when you do look at, you know, the Red Sox current situation, what their current, you know, roster crunch is sort of in the outfield with Roman Anthony, a prospect that I think with probably 25 other clubs at minimum, he's probably up on opening day and they're trying to get that prospect promotion incentive. It was a good problem to have at Sox, but you know, I think that one of two things is either going to happen. Either they're going to start giving Roman Anthony some reps at first base. It was something he was doing work on toward the end of last season and was commented on, you know, publicly, etc. I saw it happen in Worcester. So it's not a foreign concept. They sort of just brushed it off as like, we want all of our players to have versatility. And that is true. That's consistent with everything that we've sort of seen with their development with position players over the last couple of years. You know, we saw, you know, Christian Campbell, though, was primary position, second base, played some shortstop, I think played some third, played some outfield. So they do like their players to have some of that positional versatility. But the reason that you want your prospects and your players, your good hitters, to have positional versatility is to get their bats in the lineup and maybe potentially fill in a situation like this. And I think this is kind of the perfect opportunity. Do I think that Roman Anthony is ready to play every day first base for the Red Sox like tomorrow? No. I think that he's going to need a couple of weeks at minimum to probably work out there, get comfortable, and for the team and the organization to get to a point where they're like, the defense is good enough there at first base, he's athletic enough, the hands are good enough, et cetera, that we feel comfortable thrusting him into a major league game and making his debut. So I do think there's like a few things at work here. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that it's an option, because your other option is you have to go into the trade market. And you gotta make a trade and trade assets from this farm system for a first baseman. And I'm not sure that's something the Red Sox want to do.
So, Jeff, we had Chris Cotillo on our show on Foul Territory earlier today. And this was certainly not at the top of the totem pole, but he did drop a, who knows, maybe Trevor Story can handle a little bit of first base. We didn't get to dive deeper on the prospect end, but I was like, I'll save it for Jeff. Could that open up a lane for Marcelo Meyer to come up and get time there and move Trevor over? I'm thinking you're going to say no, that you don't want to mess with Trevor's Story positionally. You just want to bubble wrap him kind of and make sure he stays on the field, but just trying to figure out where Meyer can play into this.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it makes sense if the biggest question mark kind of I think just in terms of wear and tear and where Story could potentially break down, it's throwing. One position that's in the field where you really kind of minimize your need to throw the baseball, at least hard, consistently, moving from shortstop to first base would make a lot of sense. Marcelo Meyer has been excellent since a kind of a rough first week or so in AAA to begin. He's been really, really good. It's a beautiful left-handed swing. He's hitting for power. He's hitting for contact. I think physically he looks a little stronger, a little bit more lean than I had seen him in previous years. And I think the big question mark with Meyer has been, you know, whether he'll break down or not. So I think that's a viable option probably too. I'd be a little shocked if he's up before Anthony, but it's not without merit. I think that's a reasonable conversation for the team to have, and would probably come down to how Trevor Story, as a veteran on a pretty big contract, feels about making a move to first base.
Well, I thought veterans don't care where they play, right? You don't even have to tell them. They can just show up to spring training and you tell them, hey, you're a DH. Oh, too soon. Anyway, let's step aside for a moment. Then we're going to talk about a fresh top 100 coming soon on Baseball America Hot Sheet.
It is complicated enough to figure out what type of car you want. But when it comes to pricing and best time to buy and all of that information that you're looking for, CarGurus is the only destination that you should be thinking about, Kratz. Why?
Because I don't have to question what the price is. It's going to be there. If the price changes and comes down to where I want it to be, bang, I get a notification. CarGurus is giving it to me straight, and this is how I want to purchase a car. Not fast. I just want to know what's going on.
With over 4 million listings, CarGurus has more car listings than any other major online automotive marketplace in the U.S. So you can find the best deal, and it's no wonder SimilarWeb estimated traffic data shows CarGurus is the number one most visited car shopping site. So you can buy or sell your next car today with CarGurus at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com, CarGurus.com.
All right, Jacob, you got extra time in the bullpen just now. You are well warmed up, and I am ready to hear a hint or two about the top 100 prospect updated list that's coming soon.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're talking about a guy in Leo DeVries right now who's making a case to be at the top of the list. He was number one on our hot sheet list yesterday. Youngest player in the Midwest League, and he's doing real well. Not looking like the youngest player at all. As Josh Norris wrote for us yesterday, I mean, this is a kid who is looking like somebody, like I said, who could develop into the top prospect in baseball one day. Already has a cycle, as you can see, leads the league in slugging at a very young age. So an advanced prospect who doesn't have a lot of experience, but seemingly has a ton of talent.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you look at DeVries and, you know, you sort of look at Jesus Mate of the Brewers. You look at Sebastian Walcott. All of these guys, you know, to varying degrees, I think are probably move up candidates that are already pretty high on the list. But I think we're probably among that trio talking about, you know, the number one prospect maybe come July, depending upon number one, Rookie Sasaki staying healthy and I think pitching another 20 innings or so, and Roman Anthony coming up and then, you know, getting to 130 at bats. So just sort of those two question marks. I think we've kind of been looking down the road though, knowing that both of those guys were more than likely going to be in the major leagues right away with Roki or very early with Anthony, that, you know, this trio is probably the group that the number one prospect's going to come from. I think for now, DeVries is probably the one that sort of is the leader in the clubhouse high A, just in terms of age to level, had almost no pro experience last year. The questions with like the power, can he sustain it? All of the underlying stuff like contact rate, swing strike rate, hitting the ball in the air, hitting the ball to his pull side, hitting for some power in the Midwest League, which the Midwest League is very cold and treacherous this time of year. So it's a very, very tough environment. I think even compared to Mate and to Walcott, you sort of give him the edge. You know, Walcott's been better, I think, than the slash line sort of indicates if you start to dig into some of the other stuff there. But still, I think, you know, he's probably the leader in the clubhouse among that trio and, you know, could be the number one prospect when all said and done, you know, come September, end of the season, when we're ranking these guys.
Okay, so when the BA board meets, Jeff, and there's heavy debate, over the top 100 prospects list. What kind of conversations were being had over Sebastian Walcott this time around?
So the final conversations are still to be had, but I know, like, sort of leading up to it at this point, like, the Walcott conversation, I think, is really going to be about, you know, how concerned are you about the lack of home run power, despite the fact that, you know, he has a high line drive rate. I think it was 28% before I checked before the show. Fly ball rate is like in the mid 40s. He's not hitting the ball on the ground. He's hitting the ball to his pull side. Best contact rate of his career, the swing rate, the chase rate, walk rate, strikeout rate, all that stuff looks really, really good. It's just a matter of him, I think, just getting some luck on batted balls and stuff in play. I'd have to see the actual EV data, which I have not gotten yet. So I can't quote specific numbers, but I'd be shocked if a guy that was hitting the ball as hard as he has for the last 2 years isn't hitting the ball hard now in Double A. So I think it's just a really fun conversation between this trio. And it's not dissimilar from, I think, my first top 100 with BA, where we had Bobby Witt Jr., we had Adley Rutschman, we had Julio Rodriguez, and sort of this just cluster of really talented players that was sort of like, who do you like today? You know, because it could change in a couple of weeks' time.
Okay. So, Jacob, I'll phrase a question for you to try and get the juices flowing here on the list and where you're, you know, maybe higher on someone than some of your colleagues. If you have to hand out a contract to someone, if you're looking for a little Jackson Chourio kind of action, where you're like, I'd like to just get this guy locked up for a decade before he starts looking too good in the major leagues and might even be kind of like an instant hit in the big leagues, where would you be looking to distribute your cash?
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts with the Red Sox treasure trove. I would look there first. And for me, it's Roman Anthony. I mean, it's a pretty difficult name to argue with at this point. I know it's not a flashy pick among all the guys who are available. It's no surprise, probably, but it's easy to love him as well. Like, I don't know why you wouldn't want to pay for a guy who's going to slug the baseball the way that he does and has the hit tool that he has. He's a super intriguing prospect. He's positionally versatile. Jeff talked about him as a candidate for somebody who could go in and replace Cassis right away. And so for me, this is a guy who has all the tools that you want in a modern baseball player. He's going to mash. He can play defense in multiple spots, and I'd pay him.
There you go. I like it. Well, you stick around for us, Jacob. Jeff, thank you. I think we've, you know, said Red Sox, what, we probably hit the 10 mark in the show. So that usually means we got to call it, but good work. This was the day for it.
Absolutely. Thank you. Good to see you again, Scott.
Yeah, you too. Jeff Ponce, check out all his work, of course, on baseballamerica.com. Peter Flaherty is going to enter the mix for us now, and we are going back to school. Peter, a new number one school in the BA top 25, and that school is?
It's the Georgia Bulldogs. It's kind of been a revolving door atop our top 25, at least in the last couple of weeks. Jacob and I were joking. After doing our top 25 call last week, we were like, all right, this is probably gonna be the toughest week we have, and then it'll just be easier from then on. And then this weekend happened where it was a whole bunch of chaos at the top again, and it ended up being the Bulldogs in pole position, but I'm sure that'll change at least once more before season's end.
Whenever we've needed a new writer here at Baseball America, we've used Indeed. Indeed has helped keep us organized and on track and has provided a wide array of qualified candidates. When we need to hire, Indeed is our partner in finding qualified candidates quickly. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your jobs posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. That's one of the things I love about Indeed. Indeed allows us to not just get qualified candidates, but do it all within the Indeed website. It keeps it organized. I can reach out to people. I can send that follow-up message all within Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need.
You don't want vacation to end.
But with Amex Platinum, you're already planning the next one. Because you earn 5 times membership rewards points on prepaid hotels and more booked through AmexTravel.com. So every trip to the beach, and the city, and the country, and back home again, leads to another destination. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at AmericanExpress.com/withAmex.
Jacob, what do you think? You know, we just showed the board there of the new top 25. What else can you add? And what do you think of the new number one?
Yeah, I mean, this has kind of been the year of parity. We've seen, like Peter said, a lot of change atop the list. This is now the fifth top number one team that we've had in 2025. And the average stay atop the poll is only 3 weeks. So we're looking at a lot of turnover right now. Arkansas was number one for just 1 week. I do think that Georgia has what it takes to stay atop the poll a little bit longer. This is the best offense in the country, arguably. They certainly have some limitations on the mound. Not a top 100 staff in terms of ERA overall or starters innings pitched. But at the same time, you know, if you're able to outslug everybody in college baseball, which they've consistently done so far, you're hard to beat. So I view them as a really solid number one team. They're number one in RPI, and they made a lot of sense for us to top the poll after Texas got swept.
Mm-hmm. Peter.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think from a tournament resume standpoint as well, they're in a pretty good standing to potentially earn that coveted number one overall national seed. You look at them metrically, they're first in RPI, they're first in non-conference RPI, they have a top 10 strength of schedule at six, and they have a dozen quad one wins. And when you combine that with the fact of what they've done already, which is, you know, go 39-11, they're in the hunt for a regular season SEC title. Albeit on the very outside looking in, thanks to Texas's domination, but they're at Bama and home against Texas A&M to close the regular season. And I think that while in the SEC, there are really no easy series outside of Missouri, which had just swept this past weekend, I think those are two more winnable series for the Bulldogs to potentially close out the season and head into the postseason as the number one team in the country.
One thing I think is really important to note at this stage in the game is that Texas is not our number one team this week, and we felt that that was the case because they got swept. It's really hard to justify keeping a team at the top of the poll. That being said, I think there is a lot of justification for having kept Texas at the top, and I wouldn't have necessarily been against that decision if that's where we settled last night. You know, this is a Texas team that has done everything asked of it and more. They've gotten off to a historic start in SEC play, one of only four teams ever in 30-game conference schedule era to start out 19-2. So, you know, I see a group in Texas that could easily be back up there. And for those wondering, you know, why did they not stay atop if you're saying all these great things and they were historic? For me, it came down to just looking forward. I mean, this is a Texas team that has some really significant injuries. Their ace, Jared Spencer, is out for the season and undergoing shoulder surgery. Max Ballou, their center fielder, their corner outfielder, is injured with a thumb injury, and we don't know when he's going to return. So they're missing important players. They're coming off of a pretty rough-looking weekend in which they didn't just get swept. They got bullied, in my opinion, and that was why we moved them down to number two. But they really did have a case to stay atop.
Yeah, kind of a little look into how the sausage is made a little bit, at least as it pertains to our top 25 process. The spot atop the poll was, again, a great debate last night. We talked about keeping Texas there just for what it had done. Jacob hit on why we didn't. It was because Arkansas went, you know, belt to you-know-what with them all weekend. And then if LSU had taken game three against A&M, LSU would have seamlessly slid into that top spot. UNC didn't really have a busy week due to its final exams, and they were sitting at three. And then the next team, Georgia, at four, they went a perfect 4-0, and they had a road SEC sweep, albeit against Missouri. But they still went on the road and took care of business. I think a couple of other teams we tossed around up at the top was having Arkansas make a really big move and a big jump. We felt that was a little too drastic at this point. Florida State got tossed around, so there were plenty of teams in the mix, and that figures to be the case going forward.
Jacob, you know, we're a few weeks away from Selection Monday. Anything else we should keep an eye on, teams or fan bases that should be nervous?
you know, nervous, I wouldn't use that word for these next couple teams that I would talk about, but I would say that some of our mid-majors that are starting to try to make that push for a hosting spot are in a really interesting position. This past weekend, UC Irvine did exactly what you can't do. They lost to UC San Diego in a series. They didn't get swept, which was huge, but the impact of that was clear. They dropped out of the top 18 in terms of RPI. That's a really brutal loss just because it stacks up in the quad four category. They were at home over the weekend. And for a team that doesn't really get a lot of proven opportunities in a Big West schedule, especially this late in the season, we're talking about a group that probably doesn't have the runway to recover and still occupy a hosting spot. I would look at Coastal Carolina in somewhat of a similar light, although they haven't had that real stumble weekend so far. My point with them is more, you can't afford that because you can end up like a UC Irvine. So, you know, for me right now, the biggest thing heading into Selection Monday, and we're, you know, 3 weeks out still, is these last couple national top 16 seeds. I think we know who the top group is. But it's that, you know, 12 to 16 range that I think is still a little bit murky.
Yeah, you hit on it perfectly with the race for the last couple or last few hosting spots. But I think in terms of teams that made a really positive move over the weekend, Cincinnati in the Big 12, they went on the road and swept then top 25 Kansas. They moved inside the top 45 in RPI. They have pretty favorable metrics under the hood with a top 35 strength of schedule and 11 quad one and quad two wins. I think the Bearcats right now, if the season ended today, would probably be on the right side of the bubble. And then on the flip side, and then I guess you could also mention them in the same breath, but the Kentucky-Mississippi State series was also pretty significant as far as bubble implications go. Obviously, last week with Mississippi State, they fired head coach Chris Lemonis. They followed that up with a perfect week in which it went 4-0. They swept Kentucky. And I think that at this point now, there's a whole lot of life in Mississippi State's postseason resume. They're now top 35 in the RPI. They're 29-19 overall, including 10-14 in the SEC. And they're just two wins away from hitting that quote-unquote magic number of 12, which seems to be the benchmark for an SEC team in terms of conference wins to earn an at-large bid. And then on the flip side, you look at Kentucky, which is also 10-14 in the conference, 25-20 overall, and relatively similar metrics overall. So that'll be a fight in the SEC to potentially earn one of the last at-large bids. And then Jacob and I talk about it on a weekly basis on our college podcast, but it's always fascinating to see what the committee is going to do as it comes to these, as it pertains to these mid-major teams and how many bids they hand out. We've talked at length about the Southland Conference, which is pretty stacked with UTRGV, Southeastern Louisiana, both of which are inside the top 50 overall in RPI, which is a metric that the committee puts a whole lot of value into. So whether or not the Southland is going to earn two bids is an interesting storyline. The Big East was in a little bit of a similar air last week, but Xavier had a pretty big setback with a midweek loss against Miami, Ohio. They lost one of its weekend games against Seton Hall. Their RPI tanked because of it. They were previously inside the top 20. They're now outside the top 40. So a rough week for the Musketeers. So there are a whole lot of storylines to follow as we head into the last couple of weeks of the regular season. Like, there are still a number of teams fighting for, you know, at-large bids, and Jacob mentioned the hosting race. So no shortage of action to follow across the sport.
And one thing I would add to that is that, you know, we mentioned the bubble teams and the groups of teams that are maybe on the fringe of hosting or right inside the hosting line. There is still a race that's going on at the top here too. I mean, we do not know who the one seed is going to be. I think in previous years, there's been a really obvious look at a team that's like, this is the clear most dominant group and they're the obvious national number one seed for the tournament. Right now, 3 weeks out from Selection Monday, I wouldn't tell you that I have a clue who is going to be the national number one seed. We have Georgia in the number one position in our poll. They have the number one RPI, but then you look at a team like Texas and they have the shinier record and some of the metrics are better over there. North Carolina's in the hunt. Arkansas is back in the hunt to be the number one overall team. Peter mentioned Florida State. Even Clemson is potentially still in this race here. So I look at a whole bunch of teams and think, who exactly is going to step up into these 1, 2, 3, 4 roles? And so, you know, we know which groups teams fit into at this point, this far out from Selection Monday. What I don't think we know is what the hierarchy within each of those pods is. And that includes at the very top of our list.
Okay. So let me see if I can quiz you on this one, Jacob. Do we have any clear-cut definition of what the player of the year can look like? at this point, even just to give me, I don't know, a list that's pretty condensed?
Let's talk about two names that I think are really at the front of the list at the moment. And now I do think that it's longer than this, but Mason Neville out of Oregon has been super impressive to me. He's playing good defense, but the most important thing is the power is unbelievable. He leads the nation in home runs right now, up to 23 on the season, and is looking like not only a breakout candidate for the draft, but a breakout candidate in college baseball. So I would put him, you know, at or near the top. And then Alex Lodice, the shortstop at Florida State, is in the same category. Real breakout season, has kind of elevated himself into the first round, maybe, you know, early second round conversation, but also as somebody who is just one of the most dominant players in college baseball. So if I had to keep it brief, you know, this far out from when a decision has to be made, I'd stick with those two guys.
Yeah, and in the spirit of keeping it brief, I'll give two more guys, and I'll go to the pitching side and bring up two SEC arms in Tennessee left-hander Liam Doyle and LSU left-hander Cade Anderson. Doyle and Anderson actually rank first and second, respectively, nationally with 115 and 114 strikeouts. Doyle has more or less, sort of like his fastball, has been on a rocket ship since arriving in Knoxville. He's taken the reins of the Friday starter role, 2.39 ERA with 115 Ks, as I mentioned, across 67 and two-thirds innings. Fastball's a 70 grade pitch at the very least. It's closer to a 70 than it is a 6. His split change has also showed promise. And then Cade Anderson is a guy that I really, really, really like, at least personally. He's my number two pitcher in this year's draft. The numbers on the back of the baseball card aren't as impressive necessarily as Doyle. He's pitched his way to a 6-1 record with a 3.57 ERA, 114 Ks to just 19 walks across 17 and two-thirds innings. He's been outstanding this year for LSU, anchoring the front of the rotation, scream starter professionally, whereas Doyle has a little bit of reliever risk. It strikes, it's stuff. It's a really impressive body of work overall for Anderson and also Doyle. So it'll be a fun storyline to follow as the regular season winds down and each of their teams gear up for a deep run into the postseason.
So on our way out, I want to get to at least one fan question here. Mark in the chat wants to know if there's any sleeper players that he should be watching from the top 10 teams, Jacob, who could be nice draft picks in a couple months.
Yeah, I mean, I would first revert back to the two guys I just mentioned in that player of the year race. I mean, I really do think that Alex Lodice and Mason Neville are in that, you know, sleeper conversation, guys who could end up looking like real steals. It might not necessarily be first round picks. They could have played their way into that position, but also I wouldn't call them certain first round picks. And then one guy who we've had a lot of conversations about at Baseball America, if we're going to stick to the top 10 teams, is Ike Irish. I mean, this is somebody who there were questions about the defense going into the season and how that would impact his draft resume. But when you hit the ball like he's hitting the ball, it's pretty hard to argue with. So he looks like somebody who is going to maybe shoot up the board a little bit and be an earlier first round pick than we anticipated. So I don't know if that would fit the definition of sleeper, but somebody who's really improved with maybe some questions going into the year.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob hit on the key names there, especially Ike Irish. He's a guy who I was a fan of, and I think a lot of guys were fans of coming into this season, but he's done nothing but impress and to a really high degree with the bat. It's a really enticing hit power combination. He's got a plus arm, whether it be behind the plate, and it also plays in right field where he could also move off of, or where he could also stick professionally. And then in terms of sleeper names, there aren't a whole lot of sleepers on any of these top 10 teams right now. So I'll stick to the mold of guys who could potentially be first round picks. Caden Bodine for Coastal Carolina, they ranked number 8 in our most recent top 25. He has one of the more polished hit tools of any college hitter in this year's draft. It's double plus bat to ball skills, consistently moves the baseball. The power will be below average professionally, but the hit ability is outstanding. And he's also an above average defender behind the plate. So, I mean, finding an advanced catcher with that kind of hit tool is rather rare nowadays. And I think it's an appealing profile, especially when you look at this year's draft class and the lack of depth in the college position side. I think that's a guy who could fit in the first round. And then I'll close it out by saying he might not be a first round pick, but Gage Wood from Arkansas is probably, I mean, he's a sleeper and kind of flying under the radar just due to the fact that he hasn't thrown a whole lot this year. Been dealing with some injury stuff, and then also when you share the rotation with Landon Beadlesheese and Zach Root, you tend to get overlooked because it's a pretty dynamic left-handed duo. But 28 Ks to just two walks and 14 and a third innings. Fastball, kind of like Doyle, not talking about metrically, but solely from on a 20 to 80 scale, would probably grade out as a 70, if not closer to a 70 than it is a 60. Feel the spin. It's really impressive stuff. It strikes. Again, he won't be a first-round pick or potentially even a top-two-round pick, but it wouldn't surprise me to see him creep into that top three, four-round range.
Just one thing real quick to add on Gage Wood. It was a great pick by Peter. I had an SEC opposing coach tell me that that is the best fastball that they've faced by any SEC pitcher since Paul Skeens 2 years ago, which is a pretty loud praise for somebody who is not going to be an early-round pick necessarily.
Wow. I love that. That might have been best line of the show there, right at the finish line. Good stuff from Jacob. Great question, too. Keep those flowing. Of course, if you don't have a Baseball America subscription, now is as good of a time as any, of course, with college baseball season heating up. We're only a couple months away from the draft in July. Carlos Collazo probably working hard right now, doing his homework, getting prepped for that. JJ Cooper should be back with us next week, too. So great show here today. Thanks for checking out Hot Sheet. We're here every single week live. And coming up next, if you're watching, you can actually just chill there and we'll take you to the Foul Territory YouTube channel for May Day, Trevor May's weekly show. We'll see you on there. Thanks for watching.
You don't want vacation to end. But with Amex Platinum, you're already planning the next one. Because you earn 5 times membership rewards points on prepaid hotels and more booked through AmexTravel.com. So every trip to the beach, and the city, and the country, and back home again, leads to another destination. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at AmericanExpress.com/withAmex.